I agree with him. I mean, I think that Wolf was, among other things, a very good critic, almost a great critic, like Schumann.
Yeah.
And for the same reason that we were actually talking about at lunchtime, that if you're that kind of composer, as kind of verbal composer, everything you have is a response to ideas and words, and that's the mind of the critic. He has to be primed. He has to be fertilized. He has to be stimulated, and that's the songwriter, and it's also the critic. No performance, no review, no poem, no song.
Okay. In Berlioz's Romeo and Juliet, though, on the other hand, the music that is not sung in the Berlioz Romeo and Juliet is a perfect encapsulation of the text that is.
The Queen Mad Scherzo.
Mad Queen Mad, the love scenes, a lot of the music.
I hear this, and I hear Tchaikovsky only, and Prokofiev only in very general terms. I don't hear, although I'm listening out hard always, I don't hear specific allusions.
You mean actual kind of setting
text,
of the text?
I want text. And I'd hear generalities, and marvellous generalities of genius in Berlioz and Tchaikovsky, certainly, and in Prokofiev, but I don't hear actual specific interrelation to what I crave.
So what you are actually asking for then is the joy of hearing a composer whose mind, in a sense, works like Shakespeare.
Yes. But it's not an unreasonable demand, because in the first place, all good composers' minds work like Shakespeare, that is to say, creatively. And secondly, from images in this form. So it's not an unreasonable demand. And composers can often really seriously enhance their own stature by setting a Shakespeare song well. I'm sure that's what Mendelssohn said to Schumann. Song form, an inferior form, Schumann said. But Mendelssohn said, no, come on. Set Shakespeare. Then at least if you write terrible music, you've got these marvellous words.
And then, of course, having done that, it broke the ice for the flood of
Oh, sure. I'm sure this is right. That's how it began. And it was a lesson well learned. I can't actually prove this, except I think the musical allusions are really rather clear, and the dates and the other evidence of text chosen and set. I think that's all rather clear. Yes, I think that we have to thank Mendelssohn for setting Schumann off in 1840, February 1840, yes. I do think that.
Will there come a time when... Is there anything in your recent researches with Edward Ironside, Edward III, that can be put to music?
Yes. Edward III, which actually even the Oxford editors now agree is by Shakespeare, if I can sort of snip in a bit of propaganda. the certain scenes in Edward III are so, in themselves, so musical and so refined, they echo the language of the sonnets, often literally, that I was about to say, I will say, even the Oxford editors can see it's by Shakespeare. So that says a lot. I mean, that must be very compelling, because they've changed their mind. I went to Oxford about 6 years ago on a quest to persuade the Oxford editors that Edward III was clearly by Shakespeare. And they said, well, this may be so, we quite like it, but our computer doesn't say so. So I implored them to reprogram it. No more was heard. Until, quite casually, at a conference, it was let slip by Stanley Wells and Gary Taylor that the one thing they deeply regretted about their edition was the fact that it had excluded Edward III, and is therefore now known as the Oxford Incomplete Works. Still.
The greatest Englishman ever?
Yes, with certain reservations in a certain field. I'm rather in favour of Isaac Newton myself. I mean, there are other things to be done in life and the world, and the world is wide. But certainly in that respect, yes, I should think so.
Simon Beckham, thank you very much.
Thank you.